The following program deals with military and veteran issues. All comments and opinions expressed on this show are those who made them. They do not reflect the opinions of the Church of Satan or Radio Free Satan. So on with the show.
Welcome to the official Infernal Legion podcast. This is a sinister scuttlebutt episode for the month of December 2024, and it is the final episode of the year. It has been a hell of a year, and we're going to get into some of the stuff that happened this year. My name is Reverend Jeff Bowling. I am the commander of the Infernal Legion, and I am your humble host. And joining me, as always, is my lovable and furry co-host, Reverend Dwayne Burns, the VSO of the Infernal Legion. Dwayne, how the hell are you, brother?
Things are coming together. Still have a few problems with my legs, but we're working them out.
Good, man. I'm glad to hear it. And joining us in third chair is none other than the co-founder and director of special activities for the Infernal Legion. It's Satanist Raul Atando in the house. Raul, how are you, brother?
All right. It's a little we're having a little bit of a flutter thing in technology, but it's okay. I'm doing pretty good.
This episode is brought to you by the Warlock Emporium. The Warlock Emporium is creating bespoke items for the chosen few. The Warlock Emporium is the only authorized seller of items bearing the Warlock Sigil, created by Magister Dr. Robert Johnson, author of The Satanic Warlock. The Warlock Emporium is now offering a 15% military discount. Visit thewarlockemporium.com for more information.
All right, guys, so let's talk about December. Before we get into anything else, let's talk about December. We had Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day on December 7th. The very beginning of the month. We had the Space Force and National Guard birthdays on the 13th. At the time we're recording this, not when you guys are listening to this, but at the time we're recording it, we have Solstice and Christmas coming up. Oh, and we also had Krampusnacht on the 5th. So December, as everyone knows, chock full of different holidays and things to celebrate and remember and kind of reflect on before we go into the new year. How about you guys? What do you have going on for winter solstice or Christmas or whatever you decide to celebrate?
Just another big dinner. Got about 17 people coming over this time.
You going to grill up some more steak for them?
I'm going to grill at least a nice bird and a ham.
They will disappear before the day's over, I'm sure. How about you, Raul?
For Christmas, I'm not quite sure because my family's not super, super close. But my sister has just enlightened me that we're going to take my mom out for dinner. And it'll be basically maybe three of the five siblings that'll be taking her out. So that's kind of cool. I really almost don't really care about Christmas. I appreciate that we're taking my mom out. So my Christmas gift is just to be alive and taking my mom out to dinner with two of my siblings. That's fine for me.
That's cool. I mean, that's kind of the major theme behind all these winter holidays is family and togetherness and whatnot. So anything you can do with your family is a good deal.
Oh, yeah. Real state for that.
Everyone's backside is nice after Krampus came to visit. Everyone was good this year.
That's more of a white people thing, Krampus.
Yeah, it very much is. It's a German thing.
Yeah, yeah. We Mexicano acá. We don't really deal with Krampus. We call it el cucuy. We call it the cucuy. That's about it.
Maybe you'd all be better behaved if you did have Krampus.
Maybe we did. Yep. What the world needs is a good whooping, right, Jeff?
That's an excellent soundbite. I'm totally keeping that. Well, I did, let's see. By the time people listen to this, they will have heard. I did a guest spot on the Undertaking Satan podcast with Grendel Deathhawk, a funeral director who runs a satanic podcast all about death and funerals and things like that. We discussed military honors and burial, national cemetery burial, and all the things you need to know about getting your death in order while you're still alive. Absolutely go check that out. Fountain knowledge there. Grendel himself was a very knowledgeable fellow. I was very excited to hear some of the things that he knew. Some of them surprised me. I didn't know that before going in, so that was really nice. So make sure you go check that out.
This episode is brought to you by Pando Commando. Founded by veterans of the Army's 10th Mountain Division, Pando Commando is your source for the best veteran gear on the market. Pando Commando specializes in military-themed caps, clothing, and even coffee. Pando Commando is 100% owned and operated by veterans of the United States Armed Forces. Visit pandocommando.com for more information.
How to connect with a VSO as soon as you get out of the military. And so, you know, full disclaimer here, we don't have all the answers because the types of VSOs we're talking about are generally county-run Veterans Affairs departments. They're not run by the federal government, but these little county departments can connect you to the federal benefits, and oftentimes they can save you a lot of time and headache in that. They do a host of other things we're going to get into in just a minute, but every state runs their veterans department a little bit differently, and every county runs it a little bit differently underneath that. So it was pretty much impossible to track down every single VSO in every single county in the United States of America. What I did do is have our own VSO, Reverend Dwayne Burns, talk to his county's VSO and get some ideas on how you connect with them, what benefits they can help you access, and kind of in general, what virtue of doing such a thing would be. So, Dwayne, I'm going to turn the mic over to you, talk about it. I'll ask questions as we go. I'm sure Raul will have a few questions as we go. Tell us what you learned.
Well, like you said, I learned that that they are, in fact, county and not federal. You know, you get people telling you, you know, go see your local VSO, go see your local VSO. And you go in there and you expect a miracle to happen. Well, they're only people that get you in touch with who you need to get in touch with. They've got all the paperwork. You know how you're in the military and you had a DD this or a DA form this. You know, you had all these different forms. Well, they've got different forms as well in the Veterans Administration that do different things. And that's what your county VSO is good for, is get you hooked up with them.
Right. So unlike, for example, the Infernal Legion or like the American Legion or the VFW or the Disabled American Veterans, which are veteran service organizations who do have VSOs, the county VSO is more of a, I guess you could say, a one-stop library.
Right.
Right, where you can go in and find out what all you're entitled to, and they can help you fill out forms and stuff. There's obviously not going to be like a canteen in the county Veterans Affairs office. Probably not going to be any pro wrestling matches happening in the back. Although there might be, depending on where the office is. But it's a different, so the county VSO is a government function run by the county. It's not the same thing as the Legion or as VFW or anything like that.
No, the Legion and things like that are nonprofit organizations.
Right. So what is the benefit to going to the county versus, say, joining the VFW?
Get your 214 put on file with your county clerk in case you ever lose it, which is very beneficial. It opens up all the different, your county has all different benefits.
So would you then, as the VSO for the Infernal Legion, would you recommend that every vet take their DD-214, go see their county Department of Veterans Affairs, and at least get on their list, like, right away?
I would say have them go in there. Get on their list and get an appointment for a VA appointment.
Okay.
Just so that you get a even just a physical there.
Right. Okay. Let's talk about some of the benefits that the county VSO offers.
Well, they offer trips and rides to your appointments, be it appointments to a civilian doctor, a VA doctor, CVOC. It's real nice for people that ain't got vehicles.
Yeah.
Got no excuse why you can't go in and register.
And you know, honestly, that it sounds kind of ridiculous, right? But it's a real thing. Like, people get out of the military, they don't need a car while they're in the military, and they get out, and for the first few months, they may not have a vehicle. And then, of course, you have medical reasons and stuff like that you might need a ride. But your average, everyday vet may be without wheels. So that's a huge benefit.
Huge.
Yeah.
There's financial aid available for hardships. Those hardships are like rent, gas and electric, and food.
And these are directly through the county. So this is the county's or the state county's budget, depending on what state you're in.
Right.
You're not trying to tap the VA for something here. You're going into the county to the state level and saying, hey, I need help. And they have their own budget for that.
There's actually an elected commission within your county it's a board of like 4 to 7 people who decide, you know, hey, yeah, we're going to give this person this, or we're not going to give this person this.
Right on.
The way it works at mine is they allow you to come in twice in a 6-month period.
Mm-hmm.
And your third time, you have to actually go and plead your case before the commission.
So you still might get that third time, but you have to actually go talk to the board, basically.
Oh, there's veterans out there that are getting it every month.
Hey, don't hate the hustle.
There's veterans out there that need assistance every month.
Yeah.
And go into the commission and plead their case. They're usually really good about helping you. My commission pays up to $1,000 a time to go in there. That's can take a giant bite out of a month.
Yeah, I mean, depending on what you're going through, that could be life-changing. That could be the difference between being homeless and having food in your refrigerator.
Exactly. Now, things they don't pay for are, like, car payments,
mm-hmm.
insurance for your car, cell phones, things of that nature.
Right.
But should your money for your gas or go to pay for a car repair or one of those things, they'll still pay for your electric and shit.
So it kind of, you just, I mean, like people who are low on funds have had to deal with before, it's you got to figure out where to allot your money. So if you know that this is an option to help pay for your rent, then you can use your rent money to get that car repair that you need, and then this resource can come in and pay for your rent. And I know it sounds like gaming the system, but you know, it's what everyone, wealthy or poor, does. They have to figure out where their money's coming from and where to best spend it.
Exactly. There's Voc Rehab. Voc Rehab's real nice. It gets you into school.
Yeah.
And a whole shitload of benefits open up for you once you get into Voc Rehab and go to school.
Yeah.
You know, as a disabled vet, 100% disabled vet, I'm not required to not work like in Social Security and stuff.
Right.
They kind of encourage it out there, and it doesn't affect your pay or anything. Something instead of sit on your ass.
Right, and that's something we're going to talk about heavy in our next topic. Now, so is your county VSO going to, like, so for example, with you, Dwayne, or with like a VSO from the VFW or something like that, a vet can bring in their paperwork, they can turn it over, and they can have the VSO almost act like an attorney on their behalf with the VA. Is the county VSO going to do that, or are they just kind of like, they're your directory for where to go and who to get in touch with?
They're your directory. They're your directory for who to get in touch with. They're not going to do any legal stuff for you.
Gotcha. Basically, just like we were talking about the VA ID card in the last episode, this is a resource that everyone has access to, that if you need some financial assistance, you just have some questions, or you just want to know who you're supposed to be talking to about a certain thing, this is something you should look at. You should go visit your county, whatever it may be called in your county, you know, your Department of Veterans Affairs for your county or your state, get on their roster, start talking to them, and also join a VSO, like a VFW or American Legion or the Infernal Legion.
Absolutely shame.
Right. But that's, I mean, that, so you should technically, you should really be doing both. Now, the county VSO, they're not going to charge you. Right, like we don't charge for membership, but some VSOs do charge for membership, and I understand that they have overhead. They're nonprofits; they have to work on that kind of stuff. But But the county VSO is just a resource that's available. You just go use the resource, right?
Right.
Okay. And as I said at the top of this, every state, every county is going to be different. They're also going to have different budgets. They're going to have different resources that they can connect with. Some, like Raul, I know you've done a lot of work down there in Arizona. There's a lot more legal and recreational things available in your area than there is in, say, where I live in a small county in Ohio. There's also, and we were talking about this when we were going over your research yesterday, Dwayne, to kind of emphasize how different it is by county. My county, Department of Veterans Affairs, handles it for a tri-county area. So there's two other counties that report to our county. And then, of course, they chip in with funds and stuff. So it may be that wherever you live, whatever county you're in, you may have to go to the neighboring county in order to do something like this. But definitely check it out. Is there like a list anywhere where someone could go and find like their state, their county, and find out who their Department of Veterans Affairs is?
You can pretty much look under the county area. I mean, who has a phone book anymore? I know nobody. We right. do in these small towns.
Right.
We do in these small towns have them. But just look under your county area and state area, and you find your Department of Veteran Affairs, and that will get you in touch. You'll know if it's a local number. You'll know that you're getting the right people. If it's an 800 number, you're calling the feds.
Right. And who wants to call the feds, really? Come on. I think that about covers it for getting in touch with your county VSO. Raul, did you have anything you wanted to add to that or questions you wanted to ask or anything?
To those veterans that get easily flustered and confused, etc., as you're listening to this, just understand, like Dwayne said and Jeff said, that every county is different from federal to state. We all, the resources are there, but they're all going to be slightly different. So just please don't chew somebody out when a office assistant says, hey, it's different over here. You're going to hear that a lot. It's different. But these resources, depending on the funding and the bureaucracy behind it, it's going to be slightly different, man. So don't get pissed off that resource X is different than resource B in a different county, city, or state, because there's just different pieces to this whole web. And one building is going to be state. Another office in the same building, almost down the hall, might be federal. So don't be confused that all of them do the same thing, because it's completely different. And I have to learn that the hard way. But just network for yourself and advocate and learn the people there, whether it be your battle buddies, man. These guys aren't civilians. So learn their name, put yourself on the radar, and just learn about which resource does what they do. They're all going to say something slightly different, but it, just learn it about
almost,
it.
It almost sounds like you're suggesting that they use lesser magic.
It might be that.
One note I wanted to kind of tack on before we switch topics here. Earlier this year, I just asked Dwayne if there was like a registry anywhere. But earlier this year, we did have a Legionnaire who was in distress. They came to me. We talked, and I was able to track down their resource. They're in a totally different state on the other side of the country from me. I was able to track down their state resource using the internet and some clever Googling. That sounds super simple, right? Everyone should be able to Google whatever. I understand that people are in different situations, don't have different understanding. So if you do need help finding your local resource, and you are a member of the Infernal Legion, give me a call. Give Dwayne a call. Dwayne's number should be in your welcome email. Hit us up on Facebook or wherever, and we will help you track down that information. Not a big deal. It's what we're here for. So I think that about wraps up this month's tip. If you've been following along, you know that you need to go get yourself a VA ID card and how to do that. And you need to go see your county Department of Veterans Affairs and get on their roster, and also join a VSO for additional help. I'm not sure what next month's tip will be, but we will discuss that and figure it out. So make sure you tune in next month right here on the official Infernal Legion podcast. And we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the absolute worst article I have ever seen written concerning veterans benefits. Stay tuned right here on the official Infernal Legion podcast.
Why start your mornings early when you can sleep in late and wake up later to a freshly brewed cup of Radio Free Satan? Radio Free Satan is infernally roasted with a complex taste to suit your indulgence. It's sinful. That's why it tastes great. So pour yourself another helping of this podcast and others at RadioFreeSatan.com.
Welcome to the Metro. Your host, Reverend Jeff Ivins, brings you a weekly time trip back to the 1980s with songs from the decade of decadence, only on Radio Free Satan. Hail Satan. I'm tired of listening to you talking around, twisting around to make me think you're straight down the line. Are you doing me?
This is Reverend Gene, the host of Vox Satane, exclusively on Radio Free Satan. Join me every week as we indulge in the classical side of music spanning the past 1,000 years. Vox Satane has already featured over 700 composers covering medieval, baroque, classical, romantic, and contemporary music, including chant, choral, opera, keyboard, and orchestral music, with composers ranging from Gluck to Gilmour, Bach to Bellavance, Talis to Taverner, and Paganini to Pärt. Get your weekly recommended dose of classical music right here on Vox Satane, only on Radio Free Satan, with me, Reverend Gene. Hail Satan!
Listen up, soldiers. While we're out here, you will be taking all commands from the tower. And I am the tower! Do you understand?
Yes, Sergeant!
Welcome to the tower, your dose of military news delivered with an infernal edge. My name is Magister Campbell, and today we're discussing retrieving $2.5 billion given to veterans. The article is from NBCNews.com by Melissa Chan, posted August 23rd, 2024. Government has clawed back more than $2.5 billion given to veterans to leave the military, data shows. The Department of Veteran Affairs has clawed back billions of dollars that countless veterans were given as incentive to leave the military, including when it needed to downsize, according to new data obtained by NBC News. Disabled veterans have been told in the last 12 fiscal years to return nearly $3 billion in special separation pay, lump sum incentives that were offered when the U.S. had to reduce its active duty force or release slightly injured service members, the data shows. Since fiscal year 2013, the earliest year for which the VA shared data, about 122,000 veterans had returned more than $2.5 billion so far, with about $374 million still left to be recouped, according to the VA. Quote, "I felt like I would never see the light at the end of the tunnel," said Damon Bird, who struggled to repay the roughly $74,000 incentive he received to leave the Army in 2015. The VA said it is legally bound to recover separation payouts from veterans before those eligible can begin receiving disability compensation due to a little-known federal law that prohibits them from receiving both, NBC News previously reported. The obscure law, of which about a dozen military law and veteran policy experts say they did not have enough knowledge to weigh in on, had thrown many disabled veterans into financial and emotional despair since Congress authorized it in 1949. Bird, 54, said he and his wife had to leave their rental home in Haslett, Texas, to move in with their daughter in 2021 when the VA began withholding his monthly disability payment for more than $2,400 until he returned his separation pay. "We were barely keeping up with our day-to-day cost of living," said Bird, who was diagnosed with service-connected bladder cancer and post-traumatic stress disorder. "It was already bad enough as it was, but I had already been dealing with mental health issues prior to losing that income." Army veteran Salahuddin Majid, now 73, still remembers the anguish he felt when the VA told him he needed to repay the special separation benefit he received in 1992. The roughly $30,000 pre-tax payout was one of his greatest sources of pride at the time, he said. I took the stipend and I let my children read the check, Majid said. I said, we are never going to see this amount of money again in our lifetime. Majid said he put most of the money toward a down payment on a house for his growing family. 2 years later, the VA said he had to repay the full incentive to receive disability compensation. I was depressed, he said, adding that he was prescribed an antidepressant for the first time. I felt like I had been used and abused. Veterans wage legal battles. Congress has prohibited service members from receiving two government benefits at the same time for the last 75 years, according to Congressional Research Service. In 1949, when Congress authorized disability severance pay, a special lump sum payment given to service members who leave active duty because of minor physical disabilities, it specifically stated that the payout would have to be recouped through VA disability compensation, the research group said. That provision was fully justified when the amount of money involved is considered. The House report that accompanied the bill said, according to the Congressional Research Service, the justification of the recoupment rule carried over in the 1990s with other forms of special separation payments unrelated to disabilities when authorized. Those payments, including the Special Separation Benefit, SSB, were designed instead to help the Defense Department manage its force size. Advocates say that recoupment statute should not be applied in those cases and that it robs veterans of earned benefits that should not be linked financially. While those separation incentives were based on a service member's military career and calculated by years of active duty, disability pay solely relates to illness or injuries sustained during service, according to Marquis Bearfield, an assistant national legislative director with DAV, an advocacy group formerly known as Disabled American Veterans. Quote, the two payments have nothing to do with each other, Bearfield says. They are two separate buckets of money. Navy veteran John Coolidge, 62, is currently fighting his case in the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans' Claims, arguing that the VA convoluted the law to justify recouping SSB payouts. SSB was authorized by Statute 10 U.S.C. 1174A, VA Press Secretary Terrence Hayes said. Hayes said the amount of SSB must be recouped from VA disability compensation under a section of the law that applies to 1174A by virtue of a third section. Coolidge says he believes the VA is incorrectly holding many disabled veterans to a section that pertains to retirement pay, not disability. They're wrong, he said. They weren't supposed to take this money. Coolidge, who survived the 1989 explosion in the USS Iowa that killed 47 people, said he received about $23,000 after taxes when he took an SSB payout in 1992. He was told to pay back the money in 2017 after he filed for VA disability for PTSD and other conditions. The VA has been withholding about $370 each month, he said. They're screwing tens of thousands of veterans out of money, Coolidge said. The VA said it cannot comment on individual appeals. In a court motion this month, VA Secretary Dennis McDonough's attorney requested an extension to respond to Coolidge's case by September 16, citing in part his workload, court records show. Majid, the 73-year-old Army veteran, also received an SSB payout and similarly argued against his recoupment in the Court of Appeals for Veteran Claims nearly 30 years ago, but he ultimately lost. In 1998, the Board of Veterans Appeals determined, among other things, that his VA disability compensation is subject to recoupment of separation pay. What I thought was rightfully mine, Majid said, they were not going to give it to me. We need a statutory change. Disabled veterans have long had issues with the law. Their concerns prompted Congress to require a study in the effect recoupment has had on veterans. In 2022, the RAND Corporation, the nonprofit research group that conducted the study, found that the law forced at least 79,000 veterans to repay different types of separation benefits from 2013 to 2020. The actual number of affected veterans and the total amount of money recouped are likely much higher. The researchers noted in the study that they faced data limitations due to a major change in the VA's systems underwent in 2013, leaving as many as six decades unaccounted for. Despite historic efforts by Congress to cement recoupment decades ago, at least one current member of Congress is now hoping to reverse it. In 2022, Representative Ruben Gallego, Democrat from Arizona, introduced a bill that would eliminate recoupment of disability benefits. Quote, "We need a statutory change," he said. While there has been bipartisan support for the measure, Gallego said that legislative progress has been slow because it is costly. Meanwhile, veterans who say they were not aware of the law when they took the payouts have been left to make significant and often agonizing life changes. When Bird, the Army veteran who had moved in with his daughter, was given the involuntary separation payout of about $74,000, he thought it was comparable to layoff-related severance pay in the civilian world and used the funds to build a new life. Bird relocated from Missouri to Texas, paid off his debts, and tried out different careers until he landed a job as a high school math teacher at a school near his home. "It was immense," he said, of the money's impact. "For several years, we'd gotten comfortable. Then, 6 years later, the VA sent him a letter saying he should not have been receiving both disability and separation benefits without penalty. Quote, I gave up myself for almost 18 years to do everything I could to serve my country," said Bird, a senior officer who completed two tours in Iraq, including during the initial invasion. "It was a dagger in the back." Yeah, and that is exactly what it is. It is a complete dagger in the back to our veterans. To even suggest that because they were disabled through their military service, that they're not allowed to receive the benefit that they were given, not that they asked for, not that they pleaded for, but they were offered by the military to leave the service. They accepted that money and then wanted to get paid for their disability. Those are two separate issues. And there's absolutely no reason why veterans should be penalized for the U.S. military kicking their asses out, ostensibly. This is infuriating. They're literally going to those who have served and sacrificed, holding their hand out saying, "You pay me, bitch, or you don't get shit." That's how you treat your veterans, U.S.? That's how America treats its veterans. Get the fuck out of here. This is bullshit. Of all the goddamn low-down, disgusting things, first of all, in order to fight to get disability benefits, the fight that so many U.S. veterans have to go through to just get the benefits owed to them, and then for the VA to have the goddamn nerve to reach into their wallet and rip money out, it's dirty, it's low down, and it is not dignified. It does not live up to the promise of serving your country. The U.S. has to do something about this. It doesn't take a whole lot. You need to talk to your representatives. You need to tell them that this whole retrieving money that was given to soldiers when the Army needed them to leave so that they could reduce the size of the service is untouchable when it comes to the VA and them having disability for having served. I don't care if you served for one day and got wounded in combat or if you served your entire career and you're on your way out. The point is you served, so you are entitled to benefits. The payout to leave is entirely separate from that and should not. It is so dirty. The people who are making these goddamn laws, the vast majority of them have never served in their lives. They would never even dream of having their kids or their kids' kids serve because this is a class-based system we live in that no one wants to seem to accept. But we are the warriors. We are the ones doing the fighting and the fucking dying, the sacrificing and the bleeding. We are the ones standing on whatever fucking line they tell us to stand on and putting our bodies in harm's way. And then they tell us that we don't deserve the payout that they offered us? As you can see, I'm pretty animated about this because it is the lowest possible thing you could do. It's bad enough that you have to fight to get the disability benefits that you are owed for your service. But to have those wages garnished because the military decided out of nowhere that they thought, oh, well, you shouldn't be getting two paychecks from us. No, 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 no. The first paycheck was you telling me to hit the fucking road. That has nothing to do with disability. The second paycheck is what happened when you served that damn country. The pain and the anguish and the physical toll that it takes on you. I mean, some of these people in this article have fucking cancer from their service. And you're going to tell them that they have to not get that money for their quality of life for the cancer that you gave them? Not that they happen to get in old age, but directly related to their service. It makes me ashamed to be an American. If you have any conscience at all, you will reach out to your representatives and you will tell them that this is bullshit, that you cannot recoup separation pay, and that separation pay has nothing to do with disability payment. And legislators, honestly, get off your fucking asses! Stop worrying about raising money for your next bid at your seat that you're sitting in, and instead, serve the people that put you in office! Especially those who put their life on the line!
All right, soldiers, that's all I have for you today. Comedy! I can hoot! Holla!
Welcome back to the official Inferno Legion podcast. And as always, thank you to Magister Campbell for that wonderful episode of The Tower. Really appreciate that he does those and that he digs into these kind of topics that a lot of veterans aren't familiar with. And I honestly was not familiar with that specific, I don't even know what to call it, policy, until listening to that episode of The Tower. Let's turn our attention now to something that has lit a fire under the, I guess you could say, greater veteran community for the last month. And that is this fucking shitty article from The Economist. The British newspaper, The Economist, decided to give their take on American veterans and what's happening with our people. And the article is entitled, American Veterans Now Receive Absurdly Generous Benefits. Yeah, I'm guessing you can probably determine where we're going with this. The byline says an enormous rise in disability payments may complicate debt reduction efforts. Right now, the article is listed as being just done by the staff, by the Economist staff. When it was originally published, the name of the author was listed. Clearly, that has been removed for, let's say, safety reasons. If you go and check out a friend of the show, Angry Cops, he did a beautiful takedown of this article. And some of our points that we're going to make are going to mirror his own points. But he did a great takedown of this. Go check that out over on YouTube or Rumble or wherever you watch. He went ahead and let everybody know who the actual author of this article was. As did another wonderful takedown was Task and Purpose. Now, some of our talking points are going to mirror Task and Purpose's talking points here. Full disclosure, Task and Purpose is owned by the same parent company that owns Duffel Blog, who sponsors this show.
This episode is brought to you by Duffel Blog. Read in the Pentagon and around the world, since 2012, Duffel Blog has been the most trusted news source for the American military. Duffel Blog is the first and only satire newsletter devoted to the United States military community. Visit duffelblog.com for more information.
I would say that doesn't impact our opinion, but we all kind of have the same opinion about this article. It doesn't really matter. Let's get into this shitty article, which, by the way, starts with a photograph from Getty Images at the very top of a group of uniformed individuals holding American flags. This article is about veterans and the benefits that veterans receive and how they are, quote-unquote, negatively impacting the economy. Yet the photo is of New York City firefighters at a parade. So I'm not sure what the fuck they were doing there. Anyway, let's get into the rest of the article. Donald Trump delights in projecting strength, meaning he loves America's armed forces. During his first term, the president-elect signed legislation to spend more on defense before proclaiming he had, quote, accomplished the military. On the campaign trail, he doubled down, vowing further increases in defense spending and promising to tackle a recruitment shortfall. Yet he also wants to cut government waste, as he has hired Elon Musk to lead a Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. Essentially, what you're going to hear through the rest of this article is an appeal to Elon Musk to cut veteran benefits in order to save money. That's basically what's happening. Will Elon Musk listen to this? Will Donald Trump listen to Elon Musk? Who knows? We don't often weigh in on politics, and I don't intend to start now. We're just going to talk about the budget and how veterans factor into that budget. When it comes to the Department of Veterans Affairs, these two instincts may be in tension. The department's budget has surged over the past two decades, rising from $86 billion in today's dollars, then equivalent to 2.6% of the federal budget, in 2000, to $336 billion, 5% of today's budget, this year. It now receives almost three times as much as the Department of Transportation. Remarkably, this boom has occurred despite a nearly one-third decline in the veteran population, which has fallen from 26 million to 18 million. Annual spending per veteran, as a consequence, has risen sixfold. All right. Now, before we started recording, Raul, you had pointed out that these numbers seemed just kind of like they were just picked out of thin air. They're not. They're legitimate numbers. They are legitimate numbers. This author is not great at citing his sources, but these are legitimate numbers. So let's analyze those numbers. Let's see where they come from. The department's budget has surged over the past two decades. That's an interesting line, right? Because what's been happening the past two decades that wasn't happening before that? The global war on terrorism. Before 2000, technically before 2001, we weren't at war. We did not have a 20-year-long war going in two different theaters, plus a bunch of ancillary areas going on, with troops deploying left and right on these little rotation cycles, sometimes for 18 months at a time. And that includes National Guard and reserves and even the Coast Guard. So yeah, of course we're spending more on veterans after we've been sending them to war, compared to when we weren't sending them to fucking war. Also, the increase in spending, $86 billion to $336 billion, there's a lot of things to explain that. Even though the population of veterans has fallen, there's a few things to consider here, right? Yes, there are fewer veterans right now in the United States than there were before, but those veterans know how to access care. Those veterans have better paperwork trails for their care because the military is doing a better job of taking care of their soldiers, as they fucking should. And inflation from 2000 to 2024 has risen a bit. So $86 billion ain't going to cover it in 2024 because money's not worth as much in 2024. I just real quick, before we even get to the end of this article, I just want to throw this in there. This fucking piece of shit is writing about this in 2024 and completely ignoring the fact that we had a 20-year-long global war on terrorism, which I say 20 years long, it's still going on, as everyone listening to this has heard me talk about. We are still deploying soldiers left and right in support of the global war on terrorism. We're just not calling it the global war on terrorism anymore. So, back in 2003, The Economist wrote another article making the case for the war in Iraq. So this same fucking rag is pushing the idea that we should be going to war 20 years ago, and now, 20 years after the fact, when it's time to pay that goddamn debt, they want to backtrack and say that we're getting too much fucking money. Ridiculous. Moving on. Mr. Musk is zeroing in on discretionary spending, which includes programs such as the department's medical services. But the main driver of its spending surge is mandatory outlays for disability compensation. Between 2000 and 2024, such payments ballooned from $26 billion in today's prices to $159 billion. Last year alone saw a 17% jump. And the department's latest budget requests forecast that the compensation will soar to $185 billion over the next 2 years. So fucking what? That's a drop in the bucket of the federal budget. And, by the way, if I didn't make it clear before, it is owed to the veterans of this country. Men and women who went overseas multiple times in many cases. I deployed three times for a little bit over a year each time. That's half of my service spent in a war zone, smelling burn pit smoke, watching my friends get blown up, blowing up other people. And you're telling me that, oh, your knee hurts too fucking bad? Go fuck yourself. The current system was introduced during the First World War. It provides tax-free monthly payments to soldiers who are injured or sick owing to their service, which apparently we're going to argue is a bad thing. Providing tax-free monthly payments to soldiers who are injured or sick owing to their service is somehow a negative thing. From 1960 to 2000, roughly 9% of veterans qualified for payments, typically for ailments such as hearing loss or burns. The department assigns a rating from 0 to 100% based on the severity of disabilities. In 2000, the average rating was 30%. Monthly payments averaged the equivalent of $975 today. Few qualified for the top tier. All right, so we got to break this down because this is important. This does affect the budget, right? Once again, these numbers are accurate. They are correct. And I understand that someone who's budget-minded and thinking about the way that our government just prints money might be concerned about, like, whoa, how much are we spending right now? I'm going to climb off my soapbox about how veterans deserve this because veterans are fucked up by your country because you sent them overseas to do things and you now owe them. I'm going to let that go for just a minute and crunch these numbers. From 1960 to 2000, roughly 9% of veterans qualified for payments. That's misleading. 9% of veterans received disability payments from 1960 to 2000. The big problem, and you've heard us talk about this numerous times on this show, and you've probably heard every veteran who has a podcast or a video show or, you know, television, anything like that out there talk about this as well, is that veterans did not know how to access the VA prior to 2000. 1960 to 2000 includes Vietnam, Gulf War, Bosnia, a couple little actions like that. Most of these actions didn't last more than a couple of years, and while their casualty rates were super high, the veterans who actually survived weren't as high as they were with Global War on Terrorism, which is something we're going to get into later. And again, Angry Cops did a great takedown of that. But the fact that 9% of veterans were accessing VA disability says less about the amount of veterans who needed that disability and more about the inability of the military and the VA to reach out and connect to these veterans to tell them what they were owed and how to go about getting it. Now, you'll see one of the things that's different today, and it's something that this author is going to mention later in the article, is that today we have, with the internet and with veterans having more of a, I guess you could say, open mentality about the things that they went through and how to do things, you have a lot more information for your average veteran to say, oh, the VA exists, my back is destroyed, or I've completely lost my hearing, or I lost my leg or my arm or my hand overseas. I just jump onto Google and it tells me how to go through the VA process. Now, that's kind of a gross oversimplification. We know we still need to get VSOs, sometimes attorneys involved, and it's a fight, it's a battle, but there's a lot more information for veterans to do that and a lot less stigma on veterans for going and getting what they're fucking owed. Whereas from 1960 to 2000, that stigma was firmly in place. The internet wasn't everywhere for veterans to be able to find out about the VA or even begin to understand what the process looked like. So it's not that the VA has just opened its doors and welcomed everybody in. That system from World War I has always been the same, but now veterans are aware of it and know how to navigate it. And fuck you for shitting on them for doing that. The modern program bears little resemblance to its original form. Bullshit. This year, 6 million veterans, or a third of the total, qualified for payments with an average monthly benefit of $2,200, which, compared to the, what was it, $695 from 1960 to 2000, not that much more money. Veterans may file claims for an unlimited number of disabilities and appeal against decisions as often as they wish. Oh, the horror that veterans may file claims for an unlimited number of disabilities, which, by the way, is bullshit, and appeal against decisions as often as they wish. So you mean to tell me that it is a bad thing that a veteran can go to the VA and say, hey, I lost my fucking leg in Iraq, and I would like to get some monthly compensation for that. And the VA says no. And they say, well, no, I'm going to file again. I want to appeal this decision to a higher authority because I lost my fucking leg. Is a negative thing? How is that a negative thing? The average rating has climbed above 60%, and 1 in 4 disabled veterans now receives the once rare 100% rating. Such a designation ensures a generous $4,000 monthly payment for life with no conditions attached. Generous $4,000 monthly payment for life. It's generous. They're doing us a favor. Because, you know, we didn't do them any goddamn favors for the last 20 years. Starting at the age of 25, a former soldier could earn well over $2 million in present value terms. So what? Good for them. Good for them. $2 million. Oh, man, you're going to give a former soldier $2 million over the course of his entire life. That's terrible. How are we justifying that? Shut the fuck up. Why has this happened? Well, I don't know, because you had a giant fucking war. A 20-year-long war where thousands of soldiers were sent over places where they were sucking in burn pit smoke and getting their limbs blown off and watching their friends die and killing people they had never met before in their life. Maybe that's how it happened. From 2001, the department began to broaden its list of presumptive conditions, where officials automatically assume the problem is service-related, because some of them are, to include ailments such as type 2 diabetes, allowing any veteran with the disease to qualify for compensation. Again, what's the problem here? Are you trying to say that type 2 diabetes can't be a presumptive condition, that situations, things that you went through in the military may not lead to type 2 diabetes? We prove that they have. And he's gonna come back at that in this next sentence. I'm just going to read it real quick. The reasoning for such expansion is not always robust. For instance, a department-funded study found only limited evidence, quote, linking herbicide exposure in Vietnam to type 2 diabetes. Let's talk about that, shall we? A department-funded study, which he does not link to, by the way, so maybe he's just making that up, but whatever. A department-funded study found only limited evidence linking herbicide exposure in Vietnam to type 2 diabetes. Herbicide exposure in Vietnam. What is he to Agent Orange? He's talking about fucking Agent Orange. Not Roundup. Not some other weed killer you're going to spray on your fucking sidewalk. He's talking about Agent Orange exposure. 2022, President Joe Biden's PACT Act expanded eligibility further, with illnesses such as asthma and chronic rhinitis gaining approval, as some soldiers had picked up the condition from, quote, burn pits in Afghanistan and Iraq. Yeah. Yeah, those burn pits were fucking ridiculous, and we were burning everything in there, from human shit to plastic, asbestos-filled insulation. We were burning all kinds of shit, and those smoke clouds, you guys, both of you guys went to Iraq, so you know what I'm talking about. They floated right over the FOB all day long, 24/7. You could smell it when you slept. So, yeah, some veterans probably got some severe sinus issues from that. I'm sorry. Once on the payroll, veterans usually remain beneficiaries for life. Good for them. They should, because they're fucked up for life because of you and people like you. The stigma around collecting payments has faded in recent decades. Good! It should! Online videos with tips about how to boost your disability rating are widespread, and that's a wonderful thing. I am happy about that, all right? I want every vet out there who has learned how to deal with this fucked up maze of a goddamn bureaucratic nightmare we have to go through to reach out to his fellow veterans and tell them how they made it through and help them do the same thing. It is common for veterans to start on the program at a 50% disability rating. I don't know what that means. It is common for veterans to start on the program at 50%. I don't know if that's accurate or not.
Doesn't sound like it.
Yeah, like, I know, Dwayne, maybe you have some insight on this. Like, I did start at above 50%. But most of the people that I got out with did not. I mean, it took them, in some cases, almost a decade to even get 10%. So I don't know how common it is to start at over 50%.
Yeah, it took me a while. I started out at 20% and was there for a while.
Yeah.
I didn't see anything big, and it took a while to come. But in retro, taking that long, I was back paid quite a bit of money.
Sure. Sure, as you should have been. But yeah, I don't know how common it is for veterans to start at 50%. But then he goes on to say that they start at 50% only to then add more disabilities and have the rating increase to 100% within a few years. Okay, so that part is accurate because we've all done it. Right, Raul's in the process of doing it. But, you know, fucking what a nightmare, right? That a veteran could go in and the VA can say, yeah, okay, you've got PTSD. Here's 30% or whatever it is. And then as you go through your life, when you're not 23 years old anymore, and your knees start to ache and your back starts to hurt, and you can link that back to your military service, you go back to the VA and say, hey, you guys also fucked this up. And they go, oh, you're right. I'm sorry. Here's some more money. How is that a negative fucking thing? That's a positive thing. And then Mark Duggan of Stanford University has to weigh in and say, it's a program that helps a lot of people who deserve it. Okay, that's a positive. But getting on the program becomes an escalator to higher disability ratings and compensation. Once you qualify, you have an incentive not to get better. Fuck you, Mark Duggan.
Fuck you.
It's not that I don't want to get better. It's not that that guy in a wheelchair missing his fucking leg doesn't want to get better. He doesn't have a fucking leg anymore. He's broken. And so you give him some small pittance, out of the trillions of dollars that the United States of America wastes every goddamn year, you give him a small pittance to say, oh, sorry, I hope you can keep your lights on. But hey, if you can't, go see your county Department of Veterans Affairs and they'll give you a $1,000 voucher. Fuck you, Mark Duggan and Stanford University and The Economist. It is unclear if the spending is even benefiting veterans. What the fuck?
I feel like it's benefiting me.
I know some veterans, and Dwayne, you're actually, unfortunately, you're one of them, who if it wasn't for their disability compensation, would be absolutely fucked in life. Because of all the health stuff that you're going through, it's not like you can go down the street to your local McDonald's and get a goddamn job to pay your bills. If it wasn't for your disability compensation, you'd be asked out living in a cardboard box right now. What a ridiculous fucking sentence.
Yeah.
Research by Mr. Duggan and co-authors finds that disability compensation has reduced employment. Yeah, I'm sure that's what's reduced employment. With 1 in 5 new recipients leaving the workforce after the change in 2001. Maybe 1 in 5 recipients left the workforce because they were deployed to fucking Iraq and Afghanistan. As nearly 2 million additional working age men have gone on the rolls since then, this implies 400,000 may have been discouraged from work. 400,000 people may have been discouraged from work in a country of 330 million. Whatever will we do? How will we ever financially recover from this? All right, I'm going to jump ahead to the last paragraph because this is already taking too long and it's just making me more irritated. My blood pressure's through the roof right now. I'm going to read the most infuriating two lines that end this article. And then we're going to talk about it more than we already have. Reducing payments to former soldiers will never be popular, but it would be wise. America's veteran obsession has gone too far.
What?
This episode is brought to you by Underworld Amusements. Since 2007, Underworld Amusements has been creating, producing, publishing, and distributing Curious Sundries and Callous Broadsides. From the Satanic Scriptures by Magus Peter H. Gilmore to Might is Right, the authoritative edition by Ragnar Redbeard, Underworld Amusements is your source for the most dangerous books ever written. Visit underworldamusements.com for more information.
I don't know where to start. Reducing payments to former soldiers will never be popular. Good. It shouldn't be popular. In fact, what should be popular right now is that veterans aren't getting enough. Because I don't think that this fucking tool understands that they were taking children, right? 16, 17, 18-year-old children, forcing them through a fucking meat grinder, and then deploying them overseas to get their arms and legs blown off, watch their friends die, kill people they had no personal beef with, and inhale burn pit smoke the whole time. Yeah, I'm glad reducing payments to former soldiers will never be popular. I wish it was more popular to raise payments to former soldiers. America's veteran obsession has gone too far. Why don't you ask a Vietnam veteran how he feels about America's veteran obsession? Because I'm sure people are real obsessed with his service, and he really felt like a hero coming home when he had to take his uniform off and throw it in the trash can and set it on fire so it didn't get spit on. Fuck you. America's obsession is not with veterans. America's obsession is with sending our fucking kids off to foreign countries to get fucking mutilated and then not wanting to pay them a little bit of money when they come back home. I said my piece. You gentlemen want to add anything?
We're not asking for fucking fortune, guys. We're just asking for something that maybe we can house ourselves. Something that deals with mental health. Out of the millions, if not trillions of dollars that's wasted on other shit, just redirect some of that power into veterans for force multipliers. So just invest that, just a little bit of that into us so we can live fruitful lives when we get out rather than forcing us to fucking battle the fucking VA.
Yeah, no, that's a valid point, because I think one of the things that's being misunderstood here is that these are payments for disabilities, right? These are things that make you unable to do certain things. So I mentioned earlier that I said angry cops and task and purpose did great takedowns of this article. And one of the things both of them mentioned that I think is worth repeating here is the differences between, say, Vietnam, Korea, World War II, and the global war on terrorism. There were a lot more soldiers back then who were deploying than there were during GWAT, because the draft was in effect. So you had thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of troops just being pulled from every walk of life and sent over there to that meat grinder. And medical care, combat medical care, was not great back then. So if you got injured in combat, you were less likely to ever make it back home. You were more likely to die on the battlefield. In GWAT, it was an all-volunteer force, right? Everyone who was serving in the military had signed up for that duty. And medical care, combat medical care, had greatly improved since, like, Vietnam. So you could have a soldier go over there and get his fucking ear blown off and lose half of his jaw, but he was going to come back and he was going to be alive. And that's a positive thing. But when that happens, when you have more soldiers surviving these nightmarish conditions and coming back over, they're not going to be able to do a lot of the things that Joe Blow civilian can do. And so the contract that you sign when you join the Army talks about the Department of Veterans Affairs and gives you access to that program, assuming that you are discharged honorably or medically. And the VA then promises that they will help cover the difference, basically. So if you can't do what Joe Blow civilian can do, the VA has promised to give you a certain amount of money every month to help make up for what you can't do. And for some people, they can't do anything. They're 100% disabled. But even in those situations, and I pointed out when I was talking during the article about Dwayne with his health issues and the things that's happening with him, and I hope you don't mind me using you as an example, brother.
You bastard.
With all of his health conditions and things like that, he can't go get a 9-to-5 job in a fucking factory or McDonald's or whatever. So he gets 100% disability from the VA, and that helps him pay his bills. So how does he spend his spare time? By helping other veterans, by being on call 24/7 so veterans can call him and get help with paperwork that they need filled out and have emergencies resolved, at doing, you know, this podcast and helping administrate the Infernal Legion. Like, Dwayne spends his spare time doing shit that benefits the greater veteran community, and he's able to do that because, due to his health conditions, he can't work a 9-to-5, so the VA says, here, let us pay your bills. And he says, thank you, VA. Thank you for living up to your end of the agreement. Now I'm going to help other veterans in my spare time. How is this a negative fucking thing? Dwayne, did you have anything you wanted to add, brother?
I think you pretty much covered it.
Okay. All right.
It's not easy, guys. Give Camden the Economist a kind him. Fuck him.
And the audacity, the fucking audacity for a British magazine to put out an article dishing on how Americans take care of their veterans. Economist, you're the reason we fought the revolution.
In 1966, Anton LaVey created the Church of Satan, marking the beginning of the Age of Fire and year one Anno Satanas. In 1969, he published The Satanic Bible, codifying Satanism as a religion, the first time it's been done in human history.
In the name of Satan, ruler of the earth, king of hell, come forth from the pit, bestow the blessings of hell upon us, for we are your children, and we invoke thee this night.
In 2001, I was appointed High Priest of the Church of Satan. In 2007, I published the Satanic Scriptures, further defining and expanding on Satanic philosophy and greater magic ritual.
Hail Satan, full of might!
Hail Satan, full of might!
Our allegiance is with thee!
Our allegiance is with thee!
Cursed are they!
Cursed are they!
The God adorers!
The God adorers!
And cursed are the worshippers!
And cursed are the worshippers!
Of the Nazarene eunuch!
For the past 50 years, the Church of Satan has stood as the sole organization to define and defend Satanism as a religion. And though pretenders to the infernal throne have come and gone, we have stood the test of time and will into the future. Visit churchofsatan.com for more information and read the Satanic Bible and the Satanic Scriptures. Knowledge is the solution for ignorance. Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
we'll keep an eye out on everything. Obviously, as you know, on these Sinister Scuttlebutt episodes, we'll talk about everything that's going on that might affect you or that you might need to know. And we'll have new tips and more Wicked Warriors coming next year. Before we close this off and sign it off and head in to 2025, do you guys have any big plans for New Year's Eve?
Not at the moment.
I think I'm going to get drunk.
Hell yeah.
I might be baked. Not much of a drinking guy, but I'll have like a shot of Patron.
Here's an exciting fact to think about as we sign off. Next year, January 1st of 2025, will be the beginning of year 60, Anno Satanas. So, to everyone listening, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for supporting the Infernal Legion and continuing to listen. Make sure to check out everybody's individual stuff going on. Follow the Infernal Legion on social media. We're on Facebook. We're on X. We're on Instagram. We're all over the place. If you are a veteran and want to join the Legion, visit InfernalLegion.net, and you will find the application there and where to send it. And, of course, as always, another great year in the books for the official Infernal Legion podcast. Thank you to Radio Free Satan for hosting us and allowing us to continue, and thank you to all of our sponsors for keeping the show on the air. Gentlemen, thank you guys for being here, and until next time, hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
There is a new veteran crisis hotline number. If you or a veteran you know are experiencing a crisis, please dial 988 and press 1. Once again, that is 988 and press 1 when prompted.